They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
They own you.
I was tired as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
From XPR, Expat Progressive Radio, it's time for the Bills Show. And now, here are the Bills.
And welcome to the Bill Show.
And welcome to the Bill Show, the Bill and Randy Show. Well, it's
with
the Bill
Randall
Show.
Berger. Randall.
Randy. Randy's here. Thank you. Thank you. It's our 100th show, the centenary.
I'm feeling teary.
Hang on. It's my, say, maybe 2021st
20,
show.
You're 20th. Nothing.
Yeah. You, Bill, have
been
here
forever.
For 100 shows. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we apologize for having been away. In fact, I know we've been away too long because somebody listened to the 99th show twice. We had a lot more hits. But ladies and gentlemen, I've got to say, for young Bill here to have gone the distance, and
thank
if you,
you
like it, tell us, because, you know, feedback is nice. Young William
started do I this, get to talk in this?
No. I'm paying tribute to you. Don't talk in your
oh,
own tribute.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Young
I can
Will,
do that myself.
Young Will, yeah, well, you usually do, but
yes.
You have a visitor now, so I'll do it for you. Bill started this show as maybe a commentary on the 2012 election.
Yeah.
And it got to be the first Tuesday, November 2012, and he and B2 thought, well, heck, I really like getting this stuff off my chest. People seem to listen to it, so let's keep going.
Yeah.
So that's how this show was born. It was really only meant to be an election commentary, and it's still going.
We're
coming up on the midterms. So we can comment on them, and hopefully we'll still be around in 2016.
I think that I talked to Bill a little bit later on in the broadcast. There's going to be a bit that in which I brought Bill in. Unfortunately,
he phoned it in.
He wasn't able to be with us today.
Well, Father's Day. He's got so many children.
By the way, Australia 83
has Father's Day.
Mountain retreat.
Yeah, yeah. Father's Day is in September, not in July.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's strange. It's funky. It's Australia.
Well, it's because we're down here, and that's why rockets don't need as much fuel to take off, because we just drop them into space because we're on the bottom of the Earth. Did you know that?
What the fuck are you talking about? Hey, you know, one of the things we're going to talk about, actually, though, is that, like, we decided to take
five weeks. I thought to myself,
what? I don't have a life.
Life, yeah. He's a drama teacher. He staged a musical.
Don't tell him what I do.
Little Shop of, why not?
Okay.
Aren't you proud of it?
Yeah.
You staged Little Shop of Horrors, you know,
yes,
the one with the big ugly plant that says, feed me, Seymour.
Yeah, the kids were great.
Yeah, and it was a really bad Roger Corman movie, but now it's a really cool, you know, Howard Ashman and Alan Menken musical.
Yeah.
The late Howard Ashman, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But anyway, he did that. Well, I had the Ebola virus.
I
had the flu, ladies and gentlemen. We're in the middle of winter down.
Like
we are the middle of winter down.
A 60-year-old guy who runs around to his friend says he has the Ebola virus.
Look, I wanted something trendy. I wanted to be trendy.
I asked him why, and he says, because it's in.
Yeah, it's on the news. I wanted something trendy. I hope people don't mind. I'm not erupting blood from my eyes.
I will only have a disease that's trending on Twitter.
Yeah, you know, like vampires when they... Yeah. Trending on Twitter. Yeah.
Trending on Twitter. Hey, listen, we went away for 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And
we apologize.
Yes, we did. But I'm sitting there. I'm thinking nothing's going to happen while we go away for 5 weeks.
Oh, no.
Then I'm
guess
sitting
what happened.
Next to my television set. And then I listen to this. Listen to this. No, really. Seriously. Brian Williams.
And the worry tonight is about the threat from this ISIS group beyond just that region, reaching into the rest of the world. For example, the ISIS militant on the tape speaks with what sounds like a British accent. You're about to hear some of that audio in order to hear him. The fear in the intelligence community is how many ISIS fighters are Western citizens with Western passports. Our chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel, is live tonight on the Turkey-Syria border. Richard, good evening.
Good evening, Brian. ISIS is no longer some fringe terrorist group operating in the shadows. It controls territory, a lot of it. The group actually now prefers to be called the Islamic State. And in some ways, it is like a state, just a terrible one.
The so-called Islamic State now stretches over huge swaths of Syria and Iraq. It has heavy weapons, American-made ones, stolen from the Iraqi army. And ISIS is imposing its medieval interpretation of Islamic law. Yet many are rushing to become citizens of this barbaric nation.
We just want to meet our Lord.
The last voice James Foley heard was of his murderer, with what some say sounds like a British accent.
This is James Wright Foley, an American citizen of your country.
Britain's Prime Minister David Cameron was appalled.
It looks increasingly likely that it is a British citizen. Now, this is deeply shocking.
Shocking, but not surprising at all. Security officials say ISIS has between 7 and 12,000 foreign fighters, hundreds from Europe, and one known American.
We are coming for you. Mark my words.
He died carrying out a suicide bombing for a group considered more violent than Al-Qaeda.
Even a group like Al-Qaeda, which has perpetrated atrocities around the world, regards the Islamic State's tactics as being far too brutal.
A big reason there are so many foreign fighters in Syria is that it's so easy to get there. Young men from all over the world come to Turkey, they make their way to the border crossing and simply walk in. And Turkish authorities are making no real effort to stop them.
Dmitry Botnik crossed from Syria into Turkey today. He knows a lot about foreign fighters. His own son was one of them. Dmitry says he was lured in, believing he'd be helping Muslims.
You know, inside, step by step, they change their minds, you know.
Radicalizing them. So Dmitry, an ex-Belgian soldier, did something radical himself.
And you decided you had to go in and find him yourself.
That was the only solution, and I don't have another solution. Action. I couldn't stay at home.
Dmitry went to Syria, found his son, and brought him out. Now, other parents have asked Dmitry to help recover their children.
Dmitry's efforts are just a drop in the bucket. In over a year, he's only managed to bring out a handful of fighters from ISIS, and they were quickly replaced. Brian?
Richard Engel, just over the Turkish border tonight. Richard, thanks.
I love it when Mitty's foreign policy turns into an episode of Rocky III.
We're coming for you!
I'm coming for you!
I'm coming for you!
I'm coming for you!
I'm coming for you, mofo!
Jesus Christ.
Well, you know, Willie and I live in Australia. They know that they suspect that there's at least 200 Australian citizens or dual nationals of Syria and Iraq who are over there fighting with ISIS, ISIL, IS.
Yeah, but if you look at that, I think the media has gone a little bit crazy.
What about the one who took his 7-year-old and was playing soccer with a cut-off head? You
oh,
saw
God,
that?
Yeah.
That
but you see, I mean, these guys, look, I mean, all the atrocities, and by the way, the execution of James Foley and the two journalists, it's just shocking. These guys are
and
fucking
Sotloff, just
Nazis,
a couple days
they're
ago,
whack
yeah.
jobs. I mean, listen, if I can go fucking Tony Montana on his ass in about 2 seconds.
Say
I
hello
think,
to my little friend and 38
absolutely.
Of his other friends.
Really. I mean, this is one of the few times I think that even lefties go, Jesus.
But you know what? you know what? Terrorism is now more effective. People have always done
that I'm trying to
because it's now live.
Yeah, but it's a media event.
Yeah, well, it's now a media event. They used to cut off heads even in World War II. We saw pictures 4 or 5 years later.
Mm, right.
So it was, it was not something that you could necessarily complain about because it had happened years or months ago. But now terrorism, since 9/11, which is day after tomorrow in our calendar, is pretty damn bad.
But it's also the fact is that I think that if you look at, they killed two journalists. They've brutalized
10,000 other
people. Yes, they are terrible. They're awful. But Assad used to do that in a week.
Yeah.
And the difference is, so
did your friend Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
He used
our
to put
them
through a wood chipper so they were easier to bury.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what I'm saying is what I find really uncomfortable right now is the fact that everybody is climbing all over Obama because he doesn't just do something.
Nuke him.
I don't kill him.
Look, people, you know, every gray hair is worth it, he said last week. Every gray hair is worth it. And he gets those gray hairs by not doing what the reactionaries want him to do straight away.
Well, it's also the fact
he takes a bit of time and he thinks it through And he does the right thing.
If I'm thinking about somebody who's just a badass on killing terrorists, Barack Hussein Obama is my guy. Because he's going to find you, man. And he will. Really. There'll be a wet team at your fucking door. Trust me. Okay.
He got bin Laden
and
all that sort of stuff. But give him a break.
But this is the kind of shit that is actually going forth. This is what I was listening to Fox, which I do occasionally.
Mm. Yeah, and well, this, we do just to sort of like how the other half get their stupid ideas.
This is the kind of shit that it's Steve Doocy and the morning crew over at Fox.
Oh, God.
Seem to have a problem with evidently a lack of manhood coming from the White House with ISIS.
Oh, no. Have they dimpled, have they?
I have no idea. Here it is, Steve Doocy.
All right. Fortuitous time to have a NATO summit because it's about time the world got together over two main issues. How to stop Russia from absorbing every other nation they used to have when they called themselves the Soviet Union, and how to come together on a comprehensive effort and a coalition to stop ISIS. One thing is clear. We may have the power, but it seems like David Cameron has the very clear and candid voice, but together they combined on an op-ed that published today.
Right, the NATO summit certainly bringing at least them together in opinion, as indicated by their writing, which said this, quote, if terrorists think we will weaken in the face of their threats, they could not be more wrong. Countries like Britain and America will not be cowed by barbaric killers.
Wow, that's terrific. That's the kind of rhetoric we've been waiting to hear from our president. Remember, it was just last week that the president said we don't have a strategy. Then yesterday he said during that press availability with the president of Estonia, we would destroy ISIS. But then he said, you know what? Maybe we'll just manage them. This is very, very confusing, not only for people watching, but also for the White House staff, because they had to explain what the president meant last week, what he meant yesterday, and what he means now. Jason Chaffetz, the Republican from out west, is confused just like the rest of us.
It's very confusing. The president seems to be a definite maybe. That is not what we need in the commander-in-chief of the United States of America. I think history will show that the president failed to deal with this about a year too late. We should have been dealing with this a year ago. Nevertheless, here we are today. We need a goal, we need an objective, and then we need a strategy. And it just does not feel that the president of the United States has his heart into it, because the moment he gets off the teleprompter, we get this different answer saying it's manageable. Manageable? That's when you're closing a lane on the freeway and you got to go down the freeway with three lanes instead of four. Then you manage it. But this is ISIS. They want death and destruction to the United States of America.
But the problem you might say, well, Jason Chaffetz is a Republican. He goes against the president a lot. But you saw the Secretary of Defense yesterday on the stage actually going against the president, saying, look, it's clear. It's destroy. I mean, let's just make it destroy. And then you saw Vice President Biden again almost... go very over the top emotional, saying we have to destroy these guys.
And follow them to the gates of hell.
Jen Psaki had a hard time with James Rosen because of the three different positions the president took in that Estonia press conference. It just seems as though the president, again, what David Chaffetz thought, was just said, when he's off his prompter, he tends just to wing it.
Right, and I think what the American people are searching for, and I think we heard it from Jason Chaffetz, is that they're searching for conviction in the statement. It's not just empty words. Like, I'd love to hear strong statements from the president at a time like this, as would many other citizens. Please. But I think you want to believe that there's some conviction behind there. It's certainly coming from those that are on his side politically. I mean, Democrats are coming out right now with stronger statements than he has in the past.
Sure.
We've got a ton of them coming out. In United Arab Emirates, using stronger words and verbiage as it relates to ISIS. This is what they said. Islamic extremism is a Middle East problem, but it is quickly becoming the world's problem, too. Now it is time to act. The UAE is ready to join the international community in an urgent, coordinated, and sustained effort to confront a threat that, if will, left unchecked, have global ramifications for decades to come.
It's about time. That's the first Mideast country to come out against ISIS. Charles Krauthammer sees it this way.
The UAE is not afraid to say Islamic extremism. The president is. He calls it extremism. In fact, earlier in the show, you showed our counterterrorism, our top guy called Olson, and he said that the ISIS now is looking to outpace al-Qaeda as the leader of the global extremist movement. He cannot bring himself to say Islamic. For God's sake, ISIS calls itself the Islamic State. And yet we are so politically correct, we don't want to use the word Islamic, lest it be a slur on a great religion.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, to your point about how people throughout Washington seem to be turning on the president, not only on the Republican side, but on the Democrat side as well. Just take a look. Senator Al Franken from the great state of Minnesota, he's about as far left as you can get. He said, "I was troubled by the president's recent suggestion that the administration has not developed a comprehensive strategy to address the growing threat of ISIL's activities in Syria." And he's not alone.
Right. Yeah. Out of Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren was asked by Katie Couric about it, and she said this.
ISIS is growing in strength. That it has money, it has organization, it has the capacity to inflict real damage. So when we think about a response, we have to think about how to destroy that. We need to be working now, full speed ahead with other countries to destroy ISIS. That should be our number one priority.
Senator Warren sounds like someone who was sleeping in the other room and was told to whisper. But I understand her point. She's also way to the left. Jeanine Chenin, who wants to win an election in a very tough battle with the former Senator Brown,
yes,
says, quote, "Do not believe ISIL is manageable. Agree that terrorists must be chased to the gates of hell." And that is the quote from Joe Biden.
Right. I don't think chasing is one thing, right? So he said, "We're going to follow you." I don't think they should be taking the lead at all. That was one point that I took issue with. There was also a mentioned by the president that this is not going to be a 1 week or 1 month or 6 month proposition. Now, this president has been quick to set deadlines in terms of solving problems, right, when it comes to the Middle East and timelines, sure, with our military, yet not able to do that, not able to know if there is a definite strategy moving forward with time.
Well, right now, the White House strategy is, while the president is over in Wales, where he is right now, and we're going to bring you some pictures of him with David Cameron shortly, what he's going to do is he's going to try to build a coalition. And so far, former Senator, current Secretary of State John Kerry has reached out to Australia, the UAE, Jordan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Italy. And these are countries that they're saying, okay, you all have an interest in killing off ISIL or ISIS as we do. What can you contribute? Humanitarian aid? Weapons? Here. Sign up.
Yeah, meanwhile, this has been going on. They've been together for a year. The urgency's been there for a year. They took Mosul 3 months ago, and now we're waiting for a big conference to get a coalition. By the way, call 1-800-EGYPT, and France has planes, too. As tough as David Cameron's talking, I got to see some action. What about your Air Force? And as great as UAE is to come forward, if you gave your people a little bit of rights, I'd feel a little bit better about it. And at the very least, they should write a check. However, the UAE did combine with Egypt to bomb Libya 2 weeks ago, because they feared Islamic extremists getting hold in that country. At least somebody did.
I think the nation is praying right now that something moves forward. We've had the second American journalist beheaded. We have ISIS starting to take over power transformers, and we have one of the fighters who was killed just recently. Now we know that he was working for an airline out of Minnesota. So time is ticking, and lives are on the line, Mr. President.
And the next up is a British journalist who everyone is focused on now.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they think he may already be dead. All right, it's 11 minutes now after the top of the hour. Coming up, we just told you about President Obama's flip-flop on his stance regarding ISIS, or ISIL, as he calls it. So which leader sends a stronger message, our president or the prime minister of Great Britain? We'll grade them coming up next.
Why not? It's back to school.
Oh, you fucking idiots. I mean, you're saying, Obama, grow a pair. We should have had boots on the ground a year ago. And more deaths and more flag-draped coffins coming off the Globemasters. Listen, he's grown a pair by not putting boots on the ground immediately.
Do you know,
please.
Steve Doocy just
Doocy.
See, Doocy just is really confused because he's used to basically the Skinner box form of foreign policy, which is like John McCain. You just invade everywhere. That is why ISIS fucking exists. If you really want to know who's to blame for fucking ISIS, I'm going to give you a hint who to blame right fucking now.
Rarely is the question asked, is our children learning? And find out that the literacy level of our children are appalling. Why don't you volunteer? Why don't you help it mentor a child how to read? I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
I think we ought to raise the age at which juveniles can have a gun.
Karen is with us, a West Texas girl, just like me.
Yes, that's right. Fuck Knuckle McGlubbits.
Is George Bush a West Texas girl?
Yeah. George W. Bush. I am arguing, baby, and the fact is that the same people who were advocating getting involved in Iraq in the first place are the ones saying, hey, why didn't you stumble around and get involved in another shooting war?
Yeah, let's do it.
The same fucking people. John McCain actually advocated arming ISIS 6 months ago.
Yes.
In Syria. He sat there and said, arm ISIS, arm these rebels against Assad. Then we found out that the rebels were more fucking crazy.
Than Assad or anyone.
But George McNugget, let me tell you a story. You know why the Sunnis have gone batshit and gone in with ISIS?
Yeah, why?
Well, they have done that because basically the George W. Bush administration got rid of Saddam Hussein and basically
kept them in control. Yeah.
Started a civil war in Iraq and then oppressed the Sunni minority to such an extent that most of the people
Sunni
majority.
Yeah, he was a Shiite.
They put the Shiites in charge, yeah. And they removed Hussein, was a Sunni. And the Sunnis got really pissed off because Malachi, the guy that we put in charge, suppressed the Sunnis for so long.
Look, here's the weather report for Iraq. Sunni one day and Shiite the next.
It's true. And it's definitely a shit. But hey, listen, the whole idea...
Sorry, folks, I shouldn't make a joke about something so serious.
The whole idea that we have to basically go rocketing in there like Team America World Police, and Steve Doocy is feeling...
America! Fuck yeah!
You know, Steve Doocy...
Booyah!
Steve Doocy, who gets insecure if he hasn't got an authoritarian behind him yelling at him, you know.
Does he got a little earplug in and there's somebody off there saying, you know, oh, your needle's going up. Oh, the worm's going up. Say something like that again.
Yeah. Oh, God. Doocy is the guy, I tell
you. It's douchey. Like douchebag.
Yes.
Sorry.
He is. That's true. Yeah. Now, listen, I want to take a short break because I have a comedy break.
Yeah, we're going to
laugh. Because a lot has happened while we were away.
We've lost two of the greatest comedians in the world. Are performing a set in heaven.
Oh, my God. That's true.
Robin Williams. And Joan Rivers are doing a set. Can we talk? Grow up! And look, I honestly... Good morning, Vietnam!
Oh, man. I got to tell you...
I would love to die and go and watch that set, but it's probably too soon. Let's let them warm up.
I would like to actually, because we wanted to bring up the Robin Williams thing later on in the broadcast.
And we will, but people are still thinking about it, you know?
It killed me, and I was so many people asking me on Facebook.
Because you're American. What do you think about Robin Williams?
But they ask me on Facebook. They sit there and say, why do you feel so personally affected by it? And I'm sitting there going, you know how many times in the last 30 years that guy has made me laugh?
That's personal.
It is.
30 years, yeah. Since 1970, what was it? It's almost 40 years.
Yeah, it is.
35 years? We had 35 good years with the man. It's not like James Dean, three movies in the can, and only one of them released, and he's gone.
Yeah.
You know, the River Phoenix or any of the 27 Club. Yeah. We got 35 good years from the man.
35 good years, but I mean...
He just could not live with himself.
I'd like to talk about that a little bit later when we deal with Rush Limbaugh. I ruined your break. I'm going to do is I'm going to throw to a break right now, and we're going to actually listen to a little bit of Robin Williams. God bless his heart.
Rest in peace.
And we'll be back with a little Putin and a little Ferguson. We'll be back in a moment.
Oh, yum.
Yum.
Because here's the drill. Fundamentalists take it to be the word, not translatable, not metaphorical, the word. In the beginning, Genesis, let there be light. Could that be a metaphor for the Big Bang?
No, God just went click.
So you're saying we're all descended from Adam and Eve, then we're all cousins.
That's right.
Here's the thing. There are miracles, though. There's miracles in the Bible. Like when Moses, and I'm not talking guns and Moses. No, I'm not talking. Not Charlton Heston going, let the Jews go, the Pharaoh gets two in the head. No. Charlton Heston, a man who said guns don't kill people. Apes with guns kill people. No, Chucky, no! Second Amendment, it started off, it was muzzle loaders, people going like this, and this still continues. That's okay. But I'm talking about the time Moses said to Pharaoh, let my people go, and Pharaoh went, in your dreams. And Moses called to God, going, God, I need some help! And frogs fell from the sky. Maybe they fell from the sky, or maybe there were Jews with catapults going, now! And thank God it was the Egyptians and not the French, because the French would go, lunch, okay? Why should we let you go, you great caterers? I can't let you go, you crazy people, huh? But frogs fell from the sky. At that point, I'd be going, get your shit out! Frogs, I said, wait a minute. That's what we should do. That's what we should drop on Afghanistan. Not bombs, not food. Fucking frogs. Frogs, lizards, hamsters, gerbils, shit they haven't seen. And if you want to get people out of caves, a shitload of New York rats. Oh, baby. You know. New York rats will be going, hey, come on, raid. I eat pussy, literally. Bring it on! But that's what they dropped in. And even then, Pharaoh was not plussed. He said, oh, please, David Copperfield, no. And then boils, and then firstborn dies. That's it! Hebrews, get out! And everybody, banish Tadanoi, everybody! Hello, let's not wait for the bread to rise. Just take the crackers and the skin off your penis. We're leaving. Excuse me, why the skin off a penis? We're traveling people, you don't want sand in there. Let's go! And this is so passe, the dicky thing, forget it. Let's move! We're going through the desert, and then they get the Ten Commandments, would be adjusted by certain presidents. That happens later. And they get to the Red Sea there, the sea. And they go, what now, Mr. Magic? What do we do now? We're going to walk on the frogs' backs with the frogs' backs. Frogs' backs. Thank you for watching me this far. Obviously, I did inhale. So, what do we do now, Mr. Big Shot? And he calls to God again, and the sea parts. And even the most doubting Jew is going, you're good. Let's go, everybody. Come on, everybody. Let's move. Don't eat the shellfish. I'll tell you why later. Let's go. Where are we going? To Jerusalem to start years of struggle, and later to Miami to fuck up an election. Let's go. Allah Hashemme. And then the Pharaoh comes, but the sea closes, and he calls to his cat-like God, but his cat-like God can't do shit, because he's afraid of water. And then there's another miracle. The night that Mary said to Joe, I'm pregnant. And Joe went, holy mother of God. And she went, you're right. Oh, Jesus Christ. What a great name, Joe. That is so much better than Shmuel. Way to go! I love you, Joe. Wait, hold on a minute, Mary. Hold on a minute. So I'm the stepfather of God's kid? Yeah. So I can't discipline him. I can't go, you've done wrong, because the kid will look at me and say, you're not my real dad. What are you doing, Mary? How did it happen? Oh, it's immaculate, Joe. Oh, it better be, Mary. It better be immaculate. I'm sorry, I'm transforming Joe into Ralph Cramden. But it seemed to be kind of appropriate, because up to that point, all the names in the Bible are very Jewish. You have Noah, Moses, Zebedee, and then you get Mary and Joe. We are just a hyphen it away from Mary Jean and Joe Bob. We could have had Jim Bob, the son of God. Praise to him, Jim Bob. He who finds a stuff and gets me a job. Jim Bob. And here's the other drill. Jesus was an only child, because thank God, who would want to be Jerry, the brother of Christ? That's a tough gig. Come on, Jerry, we're going to the beach. Oh, great, Mom. Yeah, Jesus is going to walk on the water, feed everybody, heal him, and get a whole bunch of disciples. I'll sit there with a rash and sand in my ass. Great day for me. He ends up in a bar at the age of 30 going, yeah, I'm Jerry Christ. Whoop-de-doo. Yeah, I healed somebody. Here, Spot, come on, boy, heal. Yeah, look at that. Yeah, my brother, yeah, Jesus, he's a carpenter, I'm a plumber, you do the math. And people say to me, they say, Jesus wasn't Jewish. I say, of course he was Jewish. 30 years old, single, living at home with his parents, come on. Working in his father's business, his mother thought he was God's gift, he's Jewish, give it up. It's an old tradition. And If he was Jewish and many of his disciples were Jewish, for the Last Supper, would they have not have gone out for Chinese? I think so. Welcome to Yahweh. Hold on. One moment. No service, no sandal. Okay, you come in now. Hold on. You at 12. All I got is two tables of six right now. They're not together. Wait a minute. Hold on. I got one big table by the window, but you all have to face this way. All right. Hold on. You are glowing, so I guess we won't need the lamp. That's very nice. And you just turned a Sichuan chicken into a live chicken. You're very good. And it said that night that Jesus turned to his disciples and said, one of you shall betray me. And Peter said, is it me, Jesus? And Jesus said, no, it is not you, Peter. And Simon said, is it me, Jesus? And Jesus turned to Simon and said, no, it is not you, Simon. And Judas said, is it me, Jesus? And Jesus turned to him and went,
is it me, Jesus?
Thus you see two traditions beginning, Jewish sarcasm and Gentile humor, together, born at that main moment. And the next day, the miracle occurred, crucifixion, resurrection, and he rose again from the dead. And if he sees his shadow, another 2,000 years of guilt. Yes. And here's for me the one big question. How do you get crucifixion, resurrection, and then chocolate bunnies, colored eggs? How do you do that one? Even kids are going,
rabbits don't lay eggs. What is this?
And you don't want a kid biting the head off a chocolate Jesus. That's not good. You don't want a little cream-filled cross going, no, you don't want that. And you don't want to be putting raspberry jam in the grass going, we're looking for Jesus, kids. Come on.
Ladies and gentlemen, the comedy stylings of Robin Williams.
And welcome back to the 100th Bill Show.
Oh, yeah.
I keep forgetting to mention that. I mean,
it is 100. I'm all
this
teary.
This is actually a landmark, ladies and gentlemen. A landmark
in living room broadcasting.
It's not living room. I thought we were in your office.
You're in a den.
Your orifice.
Oh, let me explain to all those people around who actually listen to this podcast regularly. First of all, get a hobby.
Why don't we put a little still up? Our view here is of beautiful eucalyptus trees.
Yeah, we should.
In the mountains surrounding Melbourne to the east of Melbourne called the Dandenongs.
The Dandenong Ranges.
And it's quite
adjust
lovely.
Your drone strikes accordingly.
Yes, go on to Google Maps and have a look. It's a lovely place, and they're beautiful blue gums. Americans don't realize that eucalyptus trees are Australian natives, and the reason they're all over the U.S. is because the 49ers who came out here took them back.
The football team?
No, the gold miners.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can I do a face palm? Can you do that? Right? And I'm gonna beat my head against the microphone.
Above your head is a picture, and tell the viewers what you see.
William Shatner?
That's my picture of William Shatner.
Yeah.
Denny Crane.
Yeah.
That's my daughter gave that to me.
And your comeback with, the football team? That was because you were pretending to be Denny Crane.
Pretending to be William Shatner. That's wrong.
Yeah, he would
say I can't even do a good
like
William
that.
Shatner. Yeah. Spock!
You're not Canadian. Sorry.
Get Khan. Yeah,
I actually have several students named Khan because I have a lot of people.
I know.
From Pakistan.
That's right.
And when I take the role, I always go, Khan!
Khan! And they go, why are you doing this? Do they pay you to do this? Anyway, listen.
I showed them the clip from, I think it was it Star Wars the movie 2?
Yeah.
I showed them the clip.
Star Trek the movie.
Star Trek the movie 2.
Because Star Trek 1 was shit.
Oh, the one where they went and looked through the satellite.
Oh, God.
Voyager. Viger.
Went on for fucking ever.
Oh, Viger and the bald Indian woman. Anyway, yes, it was terrible. But,
yes.
Oh, there's a sheep.
Yes, there is a sheep. We're looking
across
at a sheep.
Their backyard.
Yeah, talk about.
People don't believe that we have sheep.
I have sheep in my backyard.
And kangaroos, too,
yeah,
just
right,
like in the movie.
Hey, listen, we should talk about another two things that happened.
Yeah.
Now, today, evidently, Putin's decided that he's gonna play nice,
but Putin has. I think he's always been a bit bewildered at the reactionary West. I mean, we're behaving like people used to behave before Gorbachev in Russia.
Yeah,
you know that we would sort of say something and look at them sideways, and they would go ape shit.
Well, I had an argument.
Now we're going ape shit, and Putin.
Well,
is sitting
Putin is doing rather nasty things. You know, I mean,
he did used to work for the KGB.
He's sending in his armies, right? And we have like photos of his armies like going in there
and shooting down the plane
full of Australians, by the way, just FYI.
And Dutch.
Yeah. So I had an argument with Bill actually in the segment that we did after this, in which I said, hang on. Yeah.
You just gave me time travel whiplash. I had an argument with Bill.
That you haven't heard yet.
I'm sorry.
But I had an argument with Bill.
Time travel, when do we want it? No, it doesn't matter.
I got a device, Marty.
Yeah, what do we want?
So basically.
You built a time machine out of a DeLorean.
Out of a DeLorean. It's basically.
Can we talk?
Basically, I sat there and I said, Bill, you got to admit, Putin's an asshole. He is. I mean, he's
the front bottom.
I remember when George W. Bush turned to the world and said, you know, I looked into Vladimir's eyes, and I think I saw his soul. Yeah. No, what you saw was a dark pit of KGB blackness.
Exactly.
He's one of those loyal guys that used to work for Stalin, okay? But what I tried to say to Bill was that, you know, no matter how we have started this whole thing because we wanted to get the Ukraine to enroll in NATO.
Oh, yeah. But we were lucky to get Poland in there.
Yeah, I know. And now we were pushing.
He wanted to go and get Poland, to take Poland back, and the Baltic states.
And Russia was getting a little bit pissed off.
Now, people didn't pay much attention when Obama went into the Baltic states the day before yesterday.
Yeah.
And had a little chat.
I imagine he did.
Yeah, but they were used to be part of Russia, and he's always eyed taking them back. So that was pointing a sharp stick at the Russian bears.
Yeah.
At the Soviet bear and getting away with it.
Well, hopefully that will calm down. Yeah. Now, the other thing that was happened while we were away was evidently one of the hobbies that American policemen have.
Oh, yes, is harassing people and shooting black people.
Harassing and shooting unarmed black guys. Yeah. Kind of a hobby. We saw with Trayvon Martin.
Putting their arms up in the air is a sure sign they're about to attack you. With iced tea and Skittles.
Yeah, I know. And what I was really bemused by is like I pulled this clip actually from Fox the Five, because as soon as this happened, Fox,
the gift that just keeps giving.
Really, Fox wheeled out this idea that basically the reason that people were upset was because the media was covering this execution of them. And by the way, they showed this tape of the kid, you know, shoplifting beforehand. Mm-hmm. And as if to say, well, see, he had it coming. By the way, if everybody who shoplifted when they were 17 years old got the death penalty, is that what you're advocating?
Would there be anybody left?
There wouldn't be anyone left. You know, I mean, certainly I'd be dead.
Hey, what about the New York police?
I stole a pocket cone from Woolworths when I was 12.
You bastard, yeah.
Yes,
what about those guys? Yeah, well, you should be using it now because your hair's a mess. What about those guys that just roughed up that lawyer in New York who was waiting for her children and husband to come out of a restaurant.
Yep. Yep.
And they said, move along. And then they insulted her, saying, you should have your husband's name. And did all, and then threw her against the wall and arrested her. And what is she?
There is no.
She is a human rights lawyer.
good work.
They are fucked.
Well, no. I mean, there is an absolute. What's scaring everybody
guys are fucked.
Is the fact that. Little local law enforcement departments like Ferguson, who, by the way,
NYPD's not little local.
Well, the NYPD have their stop and frisk thing, but Ferguson, in the one that they're interviewing, Eric Holt is investigating the Ferguson Police Department right now, which happens to be 97% white, even though the community that they police is 98% black. And there had been past instances of people actually being arrested because, get this, that they bled on the uniform when they were arrested. So Ferguson does not have a fantastic record when it comes to civil rights, but also the fact that it revealed the fact that, you know, all those armaments that we used to use in wars?
Yeah, what do we do with them?
We give them to local police
stations. Exactly.
You know, Keene's.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to tell you a little story. This is a little town in New Hampshire.
Missouri.
Go with me on this.
Keene,
New Hampshire was where I did my first year of summer stock in 1984.
War. And it was like this little place you went off and did theater in. I did at the Keene State College. Yeah. Keene is like a belch of a town in New Hampshire. It's just, it's a lovely little town, you know, real picket fence shit, yeah. But it's just this little town. Do you know that they have a tank?
Sure, a real tank.
I swear to God, it was on John Oliver the other night. Keene, New Hampshire has a friggin' tank. I'm telling you.
Don't look at them sideways.
Yeah, why? So you get Barney Fife, and I'm giving him an M16. But listen, I did want to refer back to Gutfeld on the 5. Now, I want you to listen to this. Mm-hmm. This, I find absolutely bizarre logic. Have a listen to this. This is Greg Gutfeld from the 5 on Fox.
The media, like humanity, can only handle two sides to a story, and they almost always flock to one side, and it's David, never Goliath, even if Goliath might be right. It's a side dictated by decades of pop culture deeming what's cool and what isn't. Who needs balance when Buffalo Springfield tells you there's something happening here? We're all suckers for that. But there aren't two sides to Ferguson. There are lots, or at least four. Aside from protesters and the law, you've got insiders and outsiders, those who stop by for the racket and those left to clean up after the opportunists are gone.
Randy, that's why I fucking hate Greg Gutfeld. Because definitely the person who's most criminally responsible for what's happening in Ferguson is the media that's reporting on it.
Exactly, and everybody says that.
Jesus Christ. Thank God. You know, I mean, Gutfeld doesn't talk about the fact that, you know, this kid, right? This kid, obviously not a Boy Scout, guilty of shoplifting at least, but he had his hands above his head. And they drilled him 6 times in the fucking chest. That's not a crime when it comes to Greg Gutfeld. When
it comes shot in the back as well.
Yeah, not like 6 times, like bang, 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 bang,
including twice in the head.
Yeah, plus the money shot.
A double tap.
This guy did not have a gun. He had his hands above his head. That's not the crime, according to Greg Gutfeld. You know what the crime, according to Greg Gutfeld, is? The hideous media that draws attention to it. Right, Greg? That's the problem. It's all those terrible people. It's, and then he can't help talking about the 60s. Mm. What the fuck does Buffalo Springfield have to do with what's going on in Ferguson right now?
I don't know what's Buffalo.
People are. I think he's trying to
ruin a rock band or something.
Yeah, but no, he's sitting there basically. He's got this thing in his head that people protest because it's cool or they want to trend on Twitter. No, they protest because they're angry because 97% of that police department is all white and has a history of repressing the shit out of people.
Yeah,
and they have had tensions in that part for a very long time. They aren't protesting to be cool, fuckhead.
Yeah, how about the guy waving a gun around and threatening people with a gun, and they shot him in the leg? He had a gun.
Yeah.
This was captured on video.
Yeah.
And they shot him in the leg.
Yeah.
All right? There was also...
Where was this?
In America.
Yeah, okay.
And then there was...
You want to narrow that down a bit?
Yeah, I'll get you the facts if you want. Another one.
Yeah, but when are we going to actually kind of fess up and just say that basically if you work for Fox, you're part of a bigoted organization? You are.
You're the world's biggest bigot at the top.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, which I find fascinating because, by the way, Rupert Murdoch is not a racist. Rupert Murdoch doesn't give a fuck about people in general. Yeah, he just knows that if you want to separate, if you want to manipulate people, race is the way to do it.
You know, they may send in the people to break our legs with baseball bats.
Who, us here?
Yeah.
Oh, God. No.
Hey, where's the guy from?
Australia?
Yeah, you're damn right. He knows where we live.
No, he doesn't remember where he lives.
Although his mother, he doesn't come back very much now that his mother's passed.
Yeah, the whole family's kind of ashamed. Yeah. Hey, listen, I've got a big, huge segment that I did with
Big Bill.
With Big Bill as well.
Yeah.
So I want to, plus that, then that'll go for a half an hour. And then I probably drop in a John Stewart and then probably wrap up.
Well, let's listen to Big Bill.
Let's listen to Big Bill for a while.
And then we'll say goodbye.
And then we can wrap up. Okay, this is something I recorded with the other Bill 2 days ago, responding to a bunch of stuff that we touched on today. So here is me and the other Bill right here on the Bill Show 100th anniversary show.
And we're here. It is our birthday, Bill. Happy birthday, man.
Well, Bill, happy birthday to you. This is the 100th episode
of the Bill Show. And you decided that you'd come in. Randall couldn't make it. We were really working on a way for all three of us to be together. And but it just couldn't work out. So I got you here today for the 100th broadcast. We took about a 4-week break, and Jesus Christ.
Well,
look what happened. What happened, Jesus H. Christ? It's ISIS, and they're crazy, and they're nuts. And the Mideast is going crazy, and the world, and Ebola's everywhere. It's like, God, Jesus.
Okay.
It's like one of those times in which, you know, I think every American feels like a Christian Scientist with appendicitis. You know? That's Tom Lehrer once said.
I would say that's slightly harsh. But look, there is a lot going on right now, but there's also a tremendous amount of disinformation being pushed out there. I look at the mainstream American cable news channels.
Yes.
And I look at Russia Today.
RT.
RT.
Yeah, well, because whenever I want a square-dealing, truthful point of view, I usually go to the Putin channel.
But you know,
no,
let's be realistic here. I've seen some good stuff on RT.
Well, that's
interview people very well sometimes.
They do, and they do. But you have to take everything they say with a grain of salt, especially when they're covering things like the Ukraine.
But they're letting other people comment that are valid speakers. And the reason that they're able to do that is because the emperor of the empire has no fucking clothes on. You know, this is bullshit. The stuff that's going on in the world, especially with Ukraine, you're sitting here and saying Putin's a bad guy. Look, Putin's a thug dictator. Putin's always been a thug dictator. He came from the bloody KGB.
Yes.
He got his education in Chicago.
He's referring to a conversation we actually had before the mics went on, in which I said that Putin was kind of an asshole.
You said that a minute ago in the show.
He's an opportunistic asshole. America's busy with like 15 other brush fires around the world, and Putin knows that he can get away with it, and no one can touch him. No one can touch him, and he doesn't give a fuck what, Obama thinks.
Our world is far more interconnected there than you think.
But he's the old style, man. He's the old style.
Well, he is, but look what's going on. Ukraine has always traditionally been a part of the Russian Empire. As part of a key part of the USSR. Humongous piece of real estate. There are a lot of interests at stake here, but essentially... Putin didn't start this.
I think that the problem basically was that if we had not actively, and if the Ukrainian government had not, what Putin's fearing is Ukraine joining NATO, and that was a real possibility, and
that still is a real possibility.
Putin is does not want the Ukraine to join NATO, and us pushing the Ukraine toward that has certainly not helped that thing. But anyway.
That thing started with people from the IMF and the World Bank. Those have long been tools of social control. We go in, we give them grants, them things.
We do agree on the fact that Putin is an asshole.
Well, we do, but I'm going to
tell
you.
There's no but. He's an asshole.
Putin may be an asshole.
KGB. He's fucking Darth Vader. Are you mad?
May be an asshole, but.
Yeah. Are you like one of those?
In Ukraine, I think he offered a far better deal than the IMF and World Bank. He offered them $15 billion in cash to tide them over. He offered to continue to sell them low-priced gas and oil.
I'm not talking about what their economic agreements are. I'm talking about them, about him taking his military and actively making war on another country. That's kind of we get on our we shouldn't do that ourselves. But you know what? No.
But
it's not about
America.
It's not about America, baby. It's not about America. Everything's not about America. Putin's an asshole. He's going into Ukraine militarily because he thinks he can.
Okay. I'll concede to you that Putin's an asshole.
That's right.
But
there's no but.
hold on a second. You're sitting here defending America.
No, I'm not.
He's He's going in with military and attacking another sovereign country.
That's right.
Oh, what fucking hypocrisy. Come off of it.
I haven't.
The United States of America.
I'm stating a fact. Why does the United States of America have anything to do with the statement that Putin is
a total asshole? A statement that Putin's an asshole because he's using his military to attack a sovereign country.
Yes.
What the fuck is Obama doing all of the time?
I'm not talking about Obama.
What the fuck is Obama doing with drones?
I'm not talking about Obama,
excuse me,
Bill.
You're comparing the
West. I'm not comparing. I'm making a statement of fact. That's the sky over there is blue. The tree over there is brown. And Putin is an opportunistic slug who would have.
And so was Tony Blair.
No, I'm not talking about Tony Blair. You know, every time you mention the bad in other areas that are habitually, you know.
Yeah, but you're acting like Ukraine is something that the West has the fucking high ground on.
No, I'm not saying that.
Get over your fucking self.
I wasn't defending or advocating the West. I agree with you on how the West is. I just said the fact that. If the West...
You said it in such a condescending manner. Putin's an asshole because...
You miss me, don't you? Hey, listen. That was a completely unintentional argument. We just started that. Now, listen, I wanted to throw
and
to you...
And again, Bill is wrong.
No. I wasn't wrong, but we'll go past that. I agree to disagree. But look, here's something that I found from our... vast storage facility.
Can you guys believe we've done 100 of these?
Past Bill shows? Okay, so here's one that I thought you'd appreciate it. And it happened during the last election, almost a year and a half ago. Here is a trip through time. Governor Romney,
some of the mishaps on your trip.
Governor Romney, do you have a statement for the Palestinians?
What about your guests?
Governor Romney, do you feel that your guests have overshadowed your foreign trip?
Sight to the point, people. Show some respect.
Governor Romney, just
show some respect.
We haven't had another chance to ask him questions.
This is our holy site for the Polish people. Show some respect.
Mr. Gorka also reportedly said, shove it to a second reporter. The candidate himself said he had been misunderstood and blamed the press.
I realize that that there will be some in the fourth estate or whichever estate who are far more interested in finding something to write about.
What Romney answered in that question is unbelievable. It's beyond human understanding. It's incomprehensible. I'm out of adjectives. All the man has to do is say nothing.
Instead, he got stuck making a comment that the Brits took as an insult. And
Romney insulted the British. An aide suggested support for an Israeli unilateral strike on Iran, then walked it back. The Romney campaign closed a Jerusalem fundraiser to the press, then reversed course. Romney suggested cultural superiority of Israelis over Palestinians. Then a spokeswoman complained his comments were mischaracterized. Romney praised the Israeli healthcare system, which just happens to be socialized. Romney aide loses cool, tells reporter to kiss my bleep.
I think you're all fucked in the head. We're 10 hours from the fucking fun park and you want to bail out. Well, I'll tell you something. This is no longer a vacation. It's a quest. It's a quest for fun. I'm going to have fun and you're going to have fun. We're all going to have so much fucking fun we'll need plastic surgery to remove our goddamn smiles. You'll be whistling Symphony Doodah out of your assholes.
Welcome to the Bill Show. And that was our dedication, our little tromp through the week with Mitt Romney.
The Mitster is really, you know, going back to Molly Ivins and her viewpoint that you need to be able to laugh at the politicians. I think that Mitt has given us an extremely good week here.
He's
I'm really
a gift
pleased
from God, man. I'm telling you, I'm a comic, right? The stuff you say means a lot. A lot of what I say, just shit. But I'm a comic, but I'm telling you, man, this guy is the gift that keeps on giving. He goes to Britain, gets off the fucking plane, and drops his pants by insulting their Olympics. Then he goes to Poland And this guy sits there and goes, it's a fucking sacred site, you fucking douchebag. Show some fucking douchebag respect.
Well, the campaign always gets classy.
No, it gets better. Trust me. He tops himself. It's amazing. This guy then goes to the Middle East. You know, Syria has a civil war. Iran and Israel. Is in civil war now. This guy gets off the plane and insults the Palestinians.
Well, Bill, can I ask you a question? Well,
I'm telling you, Mitt Romney's campaign manager is not on heroin anymore. He's on LSD and praying to be anywhere else.
Yes, okay. That's a flash through memory lane, isn't it? Do you remember that day?
Well, I look, Mitt made so much crap up.
You got to admit, for comedy, you just couldn't go past the Mitt. He was amazing. Telling 17%? Wow, what was the percentage of people that he said were worthless in this country?
47%. 47%. Excuse me.
Yeah, what a lovely candidate. We had a point to there, like through about 5 weeks, in which I was sitting there going, what drug is the Mitt Romney campaign manager on today? And it started like on aspirin, and it ended up that he was overdosed on heroin.
Look, I think that all through that campaign, we got to make a lot of fun of the right. The problem for me then, and even more now, is that the left and the right both work for the same big corporations. They both get checks from both of them, from a multitude of corporate sources. The fix is in on almost all things that are decisions made.
You know what was really disappointing was when I was sitting there going through some of the stuff so that we could get, you know, a few clips for when you came in. And the optimism, the foolish optimism that I had. Well, just so foolish. I mean, it just—I look.
That was
like
one of the things
idiot.
That made it work good. You
caught some of my optimism every now and then. You actually smiled a few times.
I always thought that was good. I think that I would love to live in a world different than the one that we live in, but I'm also pragmatic enough to look at the world that we do live in and admit that we need to change. We're on a path where we're going to destroy this planet. You know, we're not going to destroy the planet, to be honest. We are not. The only thing that's going to happen is that we might make it impossible for the human race to live on it.
FYI.
But, you know, these things that are going on in our world, I'm not certain that voting matters anymore.
I don't know about that, Bill. I'm not prepared to give it to them on a silver platter yet. And I think that it does. I can't embrace that kind of nihilism. You know, I just can't. I'm not going down without a fucking fight. I'll tell you that. You know why I vote? Fuck you. That's why I vote. I vote and I organize because they're not getting this one without a fight. They may get it, but they're not getting it without a fight.
Well, I would say that we are certainly living in that old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Yeah, it is interesting.
We are certainly in an interesting time, and I think that I actually have a lot of hope. The thing that's going to happen is the current capitalistic neoliberal neocon philosophy of just raping the rest of us so a few of us can do very, very, very well, thank you, is going to come to an end in some way, shape, or form. The people who are in the rentier class now, who are making really big bucks out of it, sure, they're upset because the world is changing, and it's changing very, very quickly. It's a very complex world, and unfortunately, to make that work, we're kind of headed towards police state city. And if you look at the recent things that have happened in Ferguson, Missouri.
Oh, well, the militarization of the American police force.
Well, we've talked about that multiple times on the show.
We have. We've talked about it.
You know, I've talked about Radley Balko, who's done a great job of reporting and written books on this issue of the militarization of the police forces across the United States of America. And that
and around the
to,
world, by the
that
way.
Seems to have around been, well, just talking about America for a second, though, one of the things that seems to have happened out of this is we've used this huge Homeland Security budget, and they've helped militarize the police forces across the United States of America.
Yeah.
And now your average citizen is considered somebody to be managed by that militarized police force.
And if you look at also on the way in which surveillance, I mean, the current infringements on the Fourth Amendment and the vast intrusions into privacy and search and seizure and
thank Lord for Snowden.
Yeah, no, I mean, here's a guy who revealed, quite frankly, I mean, look, Snowden and what's his name?
Bradley Manning,
God bless her, who basically revealed, and Bradley Manning revealed war crimes. Bradley Manning revealed a tape of literally, you know, a journalist being just shot. He detailed murders committed by U.S. servicemen that were never followed up and were buried. I mean,
but Bill,
these were war crimes and nothing happened. And the people who were war criminals in the past, and I'm talking about Bush and Cheney, these people who are just war criminals, they are. They are the people who have caused, more directly than not, what we are seeing now in the Middle East. These people are war criminals, and Obama has never gone after them, never, never done it. I mean, it's just...
Well, the point that I see over and over again, Bill, is that in all these countries, we've got a duopoly in the political system, yet there's no real difference between neoliberalism and neoconservatism. They both say that the free market has to completely reign, that the rest of society has to pay for corporate screw-ups because we're going to allow negative externalities all over the corporate world to take place. They can destroy environments, and they don't have to pay the bill. The rest of us do. We've basically proven over the last 10 years that the United States, world economic leader, is unwilling to make its banksters accountable. We're unwilling to make our warmongering accountable. Right now, the Middle East is on fire. And you know who sells most of the weapons in the Middle East?
No, it wouldn't be us, would it?
It would be.
Yeah.
No, actually, to be honest, the numbers come in at $29 billion for your friend, Mr. Putin.
Yes, Vladimir.
And,
asshole.
And 26.
I'm sorry, man. You're an asshole.
$26.7 billion for us.
Yeah.
Doesn't that kind of make us asshole?
I can criticize. Listen, I'm not going to do this again. I can criticize and call Vladimir Putin an asshole. Hey, the world is full of assholes, Bill. They're not all American. You know what I'm saying?
We just made a list of who's funding the weapons that are being used in the Middle East. And we're on the same list right behind Vladimir Putin. So this isn't to me about Putin as an individual. Yes. This is about what is the United States of America doing.
A military-industrial complex.
And what,
we have been arming, by the way, different sides in this situation. We're just kind of like flipping a coin.
We've armed everybody in Syria.
We armed ISIS in the beginning. Wasn't there a photo of John O. McCain sitting there with a bunch of guys from ISIS?
Oh, there is a photo.
There is. Oops, John. You know, I mean, we just like now we're
McGold.
McGold sitting there going, "Well,
get off my lawn!
Get off my lawn!" There's a man who could have been president. McGold, the guy who shook hands with ISIS, and Sarah Palin. That's your Republican ticket, ladies and gentlemen.
He brought
you.
Sarah Palin into the importance that she shows now.
Rick Perry may run again.
Oh, cool.
Oh, God.
Please.
Please, please, please. That's how John Stewart just sitting there going, please, please. Hey, listen, there is something that you and I actually should be very, very proud of. In the 100 shows that we ran, we got picked up nationally in America.
Yes.
On the best of the left. And I don't know if you remember the cut that they used, but I'm going to actually listen. Want to listen to it?
Yeah, let's see.
Yeah, there was
Curtis, it good?
Was yeah, it good, or did we I think we were. I think we were much more.
We weren't drinking, were we?
No, we were. But it was a much more intelligent moment than we had. And a good point, I think, we made. Touche us.
Are you trying to say that our conversations that we've been having aren't intelligent?
Well, depends on when you tune in. Here it is from the best of the left. I think it was August last bastard. Year.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 20% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code LEFT9. Now, welcome to the award-winning Best of the Left podcast with clips today from The Bill Show, The Rachel Maddow Show, The Majority Report, Moyers & Company, Counterspin, The Media Matters Minute, and The Young Turks.
Evidently, there it was a worldwide alert for terrorism since the last show, and they had to close a whole lot of embassies. Did you hear about that?
I did hear about that, and you know, the first thing I thought about is, but we had a way to warn all the people, some color-coded thingy?
Yeah. Yeah, during that time in which we were...
And Obama got rid of that.
Yeah.
And now we needed it again.
Now, save the children. Oh, my God. So, listen, what really was the story? And first of all, let me not deny that there are terrorist threats around the world, okay? Fine.
And there may be one right now.
There may be one right now. We're not saying there isn't.
Thanks for tuning in to The Bill Show.
Lived overseas is the difference in media coverage between what I see when I go home and what... is, you know, rational.
Hold on a minute. To be fair, in America, the cable news industry,
yeah,
where we've got several channels trying to fill airspace,
yeah,
24/7, has been known to overreact and sometimes
they're like a kid, 12-year-old kid on Ritalin, for God's sake. Jesus. Now I want to play for you two things that I studied media, by the way, with that degree it qualifies me to watch television. Thank you very much. But I have a media degree, and one of the things we were talking about is how media change people's habits and how the use of propaganda gets the public to react the way you want. I'm going to play you, first of all, the reporting of the embassy closures as reported by a European news organization. Okay, this is what went on in Europe, and I want you to listen to this. And here you go. This is what I recorded. This is a European news organization about the closure of the embassies.
The United States is to keep some of its embassies in North Africa and the Middle East closed until the end of the week as a precaution due to a possible Al-Qaeda terror threat. Yesterday, 21 diplomatic posts were shut in response to intelligence or so-called intercepts gathered from the phones and emails of terrorist suspects.
Yes. Yes, that was what we call news and information. Look, we're closing some embassies till the end of the week. There has been some information, but I mean, it's very kind of like
news.
This news, you know, this is something that we're going to have to deal with.
This is something that's happening in the world.
Right,
today.
We shouldn't panic.
Okay,
panic would be, you know, bad. I love the fact that she sounds
notice
like she.
That there wasn't any overblown
use of language.
Setting a tone. To try to inflame fear.
It's what we call rhetoric. Okay. And it was really almost like she's announcing a golf tournament. You know, I mean, it was that much.
It wasn't quite that boring.
But no, it was
she's
very,
actually quite a good
very civilized.
Woman.
Don't worry, it will be fine. That's all right. Don't think. Very comforting. I like that. I'm cautious, but I like that.
So now, you like that in a news presenter.
Now, ABC News. I'm not even talking Fox. ABC News, the same day, came out with this.
Another reminder of this uncertain world. There is a worldwide alert that Al-Qaeda is looking for a moment to strike. Today, the State Department issuing an alert warning Americans overseas that a plot is underway. But are there specific targets, and what should Americans do? ABC's chief global affairs correspondent, Martha Raddatz, tracking all the latest developments for us tonight. Martha. Diane, today's global travel alert comes as the State Department is preparing to shut down more than 20 embassies and consulates, the most to be closed since 9/11. A terrible reminder for Americans that we are still major targets.
Oh, my God. 9/11, Bill. 9/11. We're still a target. Oh, my God. Think of the children.
Gee, well, you know something? I listened to those two together. And you know something? If I lived in that country, I'd be crazy. It's like the media have you in a Skinner box. And every time they want you to panic, they mention 9/11. We're still the target. Can you analyze those words that you use?
This has been happening for so long. God. Don't you think that most Americans get it?
No, I don't. This is the ABC. This is ABC mainline American television. Now, they are reporting this as using every form of persuasion or rhetoric to compare closing some embassies in the Middle East for a week to 9/11.
And what is the purpose? What is the purpose? And would you believe it? Would you believe it if you knew what you were for and how you became so informed? Bodies of info, performance.
God, we were fantastic. Chet, who were those guys?
Yeah. And then we, started really looking at the world and we became, dystopian.
Well, no, that's actually.
Or was that me?
That's you. Oh, okay. That's you. Yeah. I remember you literally came up to me and said, man, I can't do this anymore, man. I just can't be staring into that abyss any longer. And, to a certain extent, I dig where you're coming from. I mean, you're the one who started me reading everything. And not just lefty shit, but just reading the newspaper.
The newspaper actually has most of the stuff that happens out there. But I must say that I believe that a lot of people are rowing about as fast as they can. And our world is changing so quickly that it's difficult for a lot of us to keep up. If you're trying to raise kids, keep a job, your wife keep a job, you're really pushed to have time to really understand the complexity of some of the issues that we face. I actually see a tremendous prescience in some of the science fiction writers, like David Brin, who wrote a book called Earth. And in it, he said that, in the future, he took as a premise of this particular book, and he said, well, let's look ahead 50 years.
Yeah.
And try to decide what it could be like. And in it, he described an internet in which the people who really cared about particular issues all got together and voted on the internet, which means we need to come up with some safe identity way that we could actually control voting like that without it being manipulated by some asshole. And I really think that's prescient. I think that for a lot of the policy things, most of us that pay attention and have a progressive leaning at all tend to want policy to be driven by evidence. If we find that something works, let's help promote that happening in other places. Yeah. If we find things that don't work, quit throwing money at them.
And I'm very terrified right now. I think after sitting here watching, actually, there are a couple of things that terrify me 100 shows on. I'm terrified by the absolute self-destructiveness of conservatism and how it really doesn't care. Literally, when you talk about the global warming and the what is happening to this earth, and how in 30 years you're going to have wars over potable water, you're going to have wars over arable land, there's going to be huge millions of people displaced throughout the entire world if we don't solve this problem. And people really are so greedy that they just don't care. They just don't care.
Well, no, Bill, there's a very small group of people who really just don't care. They just happen to have their hands on the lever of power.
Yeah, I know. And that has terrified me. It has absolutely terrified me that by the time we realize the irreversible damage we're doing to the world right now and its ability to actually support humanity, it will be too late. And that's something that's
a very good way of putting it, because it really does come down to the fact that it's not that we're destroying the planet. We're not. We're just destroying the ability of humankind to live on it. Yeah. And we're doing it so that a few people can have a few dollars more.
Yeah.
I think we've got to realign our entire thinking, and I actually think that that is already started. We're seeing the beginning signs of collapse, and I think that we need to pay attention to what's going on. A lot of us are, but a lot of us, even seeing it, don't quite know what to do to change it.
Yeah.
Because certainly in the United States, this militarized police force concept has made marching for black people, Latina people, for poor people.
But people are doing it.
People are doing it to a point, but we have stifled dissent by letting police departments act in an authoritarian way and stomp down those Occupy people, as an example. Look, the Occupy...
what was happening in Ferguson is just another tick. You see, the thing is, we've been doing a bi-weekly...
But there are hundreds of Fergusons.
We've been doing a bi-weekly show for a year and a half, and we have done 3 shows so far on black people being just shot. Shot. Trayvon Martin. Just
unaccountable.
Shot. You know, just no accountability whatsoever. And I
the
can't
person
tell you,
who did it? Oh, you know, well, it was a black guy. I was scared.
Oh, tough.
I was scared. I was pissing my pants scared,
woman,
man.
Woman in Florida who basically, you know, shot a warning shot at a wall and got 20 years in prison. Meanwhile, Zimmerman walked free. And this is again and again and again happening. And the fact is that what Jon Stewart said this week on about the thing
on Ferguson.
Yeah, and one thing I want to say.
I've got to say that Jon Stewart clip. Have you got that? Because I really want to hear that again.
I do have that clip. I have the clip. I'll play it on the outro that you and I do today, so you'll be able to hear it.
Look, it's really quite... you know, one of the things about the satirists is that as our world gets tougher and tougher...
They get funnier.
They get funnier, and yet everything that he did was absolutely funny as... And absolutely so sad. Such a sad comment. I'll wait. For those who haven't heard it, I'd rather let Jon Stewart do it because he does it so well. I'll move off on that.
But it's
something that, you know, these guys are going to keep getting better and better. John Oliver's new show.
I love it.
Top marks. Top marks.
Listen, I want to just thank you for coming by to talk a few things. We're running on a half an hour. And
that's all right. The 100th show is going to be way over, guys.
It's going to be way over.
Sorry.
Got to tell you something, man. It's always good to have you back whenever you feel you can brace yourself. Because, you know, the truth is, I happen to know this is the nicest person in the entire world that is right next to me. He's the loveliest man in the world, generous to a fault, a sweet-natured human being. And
who happens to hate America?
No, you don't hate America. You love America. You absolutely do. And
that's the problem.
The problem is it's
see, I'm one of those folks.
Relationship,
I'm one of those folks who bought into the American dream, and then had it not work for him. So you know, I'm still out here poor and trying to make a scratch through a living just to get through to the end of my life. And I really still love so much of what I learned as I grew up. I got to grow
up. You were an Eagle Scout, dude.
I was an Eagle Scout. I had my God and Country Award all by the time I was 14. I was really lucky. I feel that my Midwest upbringing, yes, very Bible Beltish, but that didn't really hurt me a lot. And I really think that our world, I actually kind of bring on the collapse, because what we're going to build afterwards is going to be really, really friggin' cool. And I think that our world there's a lot of people that understand why it's important to have communities. We've got to quit shipping stuff from place to place to place. All places need to grow basic food, real food, vegetables, fruits, starches, so that we can live off of the food we grow out of the ground. We don't have to use GMOs to do this. It's silly. We need real food. Need to eat less meat. We need to deal with our world energy supply, with our climate change. right now, we're approaching a very, very short way away from the fact that solar is going to be cheaper than any other source of energy. And people are putting solar on their roofs, and the big corporations are saying, oy vey, what? You're going to take away our profits.
That's right.
Aww.
It's going to happen.
Aww. Happen. Can I have a violin?
For
the poor corporations?
You're not the most sympathetic ear for the idle rich, are you?
No, I probably...
I don't see in the future you being on a kind of cruise and someone going up to you and going with a monocle going, I tell you, Bill, I'm indecently rich and I run a hedge fund, but I just can't seem to make my life make sense. I feel very unhappy. I'm thinking of killing myself. At which point, Bill over here would go...
Would you like to use my gun?
And he's the sweetest person in the world, people. Ladies and gentlemen.
Unfortunately, I wouldn't have a gun to give him.
No, of course you wouldn't. That's right. Thanks, Bill, for coming by. And as requested, here's that John Stewart piece so that you can listen to it.
Ah, thank you very much.
Here's John.
Nice to talk to everybody. See you later.
We'll see you again sometime soon. Here's John Ferguson. No, John Stewart. Sorry, you got me confused.
Hey, whiskey's fault.
Well, John Stewart on the
Fergus. I told you you shouldn't have had that fourth shot in a row.
There you go. Here's John Stewart.
Obviously, the big news of the past few weeks, the town of Ferguson, Missouri, where the shooting by police of teenager Michael Brown has sparked a series of protests, which in turn sparked a, let's say, stern response by police who appear to be auditioning for RoboCop. It's a story that has a lot of people outraged and upset.
I came back from vacation because I am furious.
Of course you are! An unarmed black teenager gunned down in the street by police under suspicious circumstances. Who wouldn't cut their vacation short to register their fury? You'd have to be a monster or, in my case, enjoying a particularly nice vacation. But good on you, Mr. O'Reilly, for coming back. Unless, of course, you're furious about something else.
Furious about how the shooting death of 18-year-old Michael Brown is being reported and how various people are reacting to it.
Yes! That is the outrage. The shooting of Michael Brown and any lack of transparency from the police department responsible for said incident is outrageous in how it has been reported. And I guess that's not the only reason to be angry.
Is he going to get a fair shake, this officer?
There has been a rush to judgment.
Eric Holder flies into Ferguson, with his superhero cape.
This mantra of the unarmed black teenager shot by a white cop, you know, that description in and of itself actually colors the way in which we look at this story.
Yes, describing the actual facts of the case really does color the way we look at it. White cop shoots unarmed black teen does sound terrible. Whereas, say, hero cop kills alien hunting humans for sport would put a completely different spin on things. Which, though a very accurate description of the plot of Predator 2, is in this case not what happened. And you know what? There's so many other stories out there.
Why aren't we covering New York?
Why aren't we covering black-on-black crime?
Yes! Why all the interest in holding police officers to a higher standard than gangs? They both flash colors, and yes, one of them has been sworn to protect and defend, but still.
Well, this weekend, 42 people shot in Chicago. You know, I don't see the protests. I don't see the anger.
If I were African-American, I would be outraged that more journalists aren't covering what's happening in Chicago and more outraged that people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson don't head to those areas.
Yes. What could explain the lack of outrage about Al Sharpton and his ilk not doing anything about black-on-black violence in Chicago?
With Chicago's violence making national headlines, a group led by the Reverend Al Sharpton plans to convene an anti-violence summit of national civil rights leaders here.
Oh, that's right, because African-American leaders did hold a summit about that in November and have met at least 3 times in the city just in the last 13 months, which is not to say it's been effective, but taken along with the President's My Brother's Keeper initiative, which attempts to address this violence and the countless vigils and marches within these violence-torn communities, means they are trying, actually, to do something. You see, you being ignorant of those attempts doesn't mean the issue itself is being ignored, in the same way that when it snows where you live doesn't mean the world isn't getting hotter. Oh, you know what? There's something else bothering you, isn't there?
When a cop pulls me over, I say, I put my hands outside of the car. If I'm carrying a weapon, which I'm licensed to carry in New York, the first thing I tell the police officer is, officer, I want you to know I have a legal firearm in the car.
And then I brace myself for the taser. Well, without getting into the fact that you get pulled over so much by the cops that sometimes you're carrying a weapon, sometimes you're not. I don't know. It just depends on how I'm feeling that day. But continue.
I often would even take my step out of the car, lift my shirt up so we could see where the gun is.
You really do have no idea, do you? You really do. Basically, you're saying... If only Michael Brown, instead of holding his hands over his head, had reached down to his waist and lifted up his shirt to show the gun he did not actually have, well, this whole tragedy could have been avoided. Do you not understand that life in this country is inherently different for white people and black people?
A lot of people are trying to make this, Dana, about black and white, and trying to make this about race.
This is part of this effort to make it everything about race.
Is this a story about race? Do we know that?
I think it is playing the race card, and I think it's disgraceful.
The only racial divide that is created here is being created by the race baiters.
You know who talks about race? Racists.
Did you just, he who smelt it, dealt it, racism? Did you really, he who smelt it, dealt it, racism? All right. Forget that in Ferguson, 94% of the police are white and 63% of the people are black. Forget that 92% of police searches and 86% of car stops are for black people. Forget that the white municipal government finances nearly a quarter of its annual budget through the fines and penalties disproportionately leveled against the black portion of the population. Forget that the history of this town includes this tasty nugget.
A 52-year-old man named Henry Davis said that four Ferguson police officers beat him, then charged him with damaging government property because his blood had gotten on the officers' uniforms.
So let me get this straight. You guys got tanks, but you can't keep a couple of Tide sticks around? Because here's the problem with everything that's going on in this conversation. This isn't all about just one man killed in one town. It's about how people of color, no matter their socioeconomic standing, face obstacles in this country with surprising grace. Look at how upset you all get about certain things.
Tonight, Christmas under attack.
Why are we allowing anti-Christmas madness?
Why do I have to drive around with my kids to look for nativity scenes and be like, oh yeah, kids, look, there's baby Jesus behind the Festivus pole made out of beer cans. It's nuts.
Remember? You were furious that America's 11-month-long celebration of Christmas wasn't enough. But now, if you can, just imagine that instead of having to suffer the indignity of a Festivus pole blocking something, you could have just set up in your own yard anyway. Imagine that instead of that, on a pretty consistent basis, you can't get a f***ing cab, even though you're a neurosurgeon, because you're black. I guarantee you that every person of color in this country has faced an indignity, from the ridiculous to the grotesque to the sometimes fatal, at some point in their, I'm going to say, last couple of hours, because of their skin color. Quick story. So we live in New York City, a liberal bastion. Recently, let me finish. Recently, we sent a correspondent and a producer to a building in this liberal bastion where we were going to tape an interview. The producer, white, dressed in what could only be described as homeless elf attire. And a pretty strong 5 o'clock from the previous week shadow strode confidently into the building, preceding our humble correspondent, a gentleman of color, dressed resplendently in a tailored suit. Who do you think was stopped? Let me give you a hint, the black guy. And that happens all the time, all of it. Race is there, and it is a constant. You're tired of hearing about it? Imagine how exhausting it is living it. We'll be right back.
The show. Thank you so much.
Now it's time to say,
goodbye to all our family.
Okay, that's
not.
MIC. No, we'll
see you real soon. Okay, you can reach us on the The Bill Show on XBR at gmail.com, and you can reach us at our home website, www.expatprogressive.podbean.com, and you can get us also on Stitcher Radio, and iTunes as well.
That's where I get it.
That's well, so many people. Yes, yeah. You do. Anyway, listen. Thanks very much. We're just going to play a little bit of rock and roll.
Why don't we did promise to put a picture up. Go and have a look at the website, and you might find pictures of Bill's backyard.
Bill's backyard. That'll be fascinating for everybody.
Love to be in Bill's neighborhood.
Fortunate Son. That's right. We'll take us out with the original theme to The Bill Show. Thank you for listening to us for 100 episodes, and we look forward to 100 more.
At least 100 more.
Until I'm still, you know, I'm around. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.